This is Life I Swear, where we share stories and reflections from Black women about trials in their lives that have helped them heal, connect, and process. Every week, we hold space for storytelling that both challenges and inspires us to be good to ourselves. I'm your host, Chloe Dulce Luvueso. Today's topic is actually what inspired this podcast. We're talking about pregnancy loss. I haven't shared too much about myself on the show, and it's felt overdue. But today especially, I feel like I owe it to you all. So this week would have been the 1 year birthday of the son I lost last spring at 27 weeks pregnant. I was stressed, and my body and mind just could not handle. After having that experience, I fell into deep depression, which was layered with the hormones detoxing from my body, physical healing, breast engorgement, which was really crazy, and grief from also separating from my partner all within 2 months. On top of that, I had several panic attacks at home and in public, paranoid at the thought of someone asking me about the baby, and developed real social anxiety. And I knew for sure there was no way I could go back to work. So I took a year off. And for the first few months, I was completely stuck, sometimes days at a time, staring out the window. And at the end of each day, as I lay in bed most nights until 3 or 4 in the morning, unable to fall asleep because my womb and my bed just felt empty. I always say, and I've heard this before, grief is love with nowhere to go. And this is exactly what that was. In all bittersweetness, I accepted the double loss for what it was. In the earlier months, I had a lot of guilt about the pregnancy loss and resentment about the end of my relationship, but both, I believe, propelled me to understand and love on myself deeper because together they put me in a position to sit still, literally sit in bed, go numb, then feel all the feels, cry it out, let them pass, journal, and repeat until all the noise in my head came and went. Time was the biggest blessing. And while the timing of both losses happening at once felt like God was not on my side, the gift of time to heal showed that he most definitely was. So picking up the pieces of my life this past year has been no easy task. Finances, relationships, self-confidence, my faith, my body have all been tested. And if there's one thing about me, I'm not one to sulk or dwell or sit in my tears for too long. It may be pride, it may be anxiousness, but I really enjoy the adrenaline of just leaping forward. And to be honest, it's not always mindful resilience. Sometimes it's escapism that just happens to work in my favor because it's healthy distraction. But that's what I did. I started a business. I got my body feeling strong again. I set boundaries. I poured into my fulfilling relationships and into myself. I wrote a book. I started this podcast. I was out to prove something to myself. That the shit show of 2019, yes, most definitely was a defining moment, but that it was up to me to choose how that moment would be defined. Today, I feel more awake than I ever have because for the first time in my life this past year, I've had to teach myself to give myself some grace. That's not something I ever had the practice or intention to do before, but it's just so central to how I grew my thoughts now. So I'll end with this. Pregnancy loss for so many women is unbearable and we all process it differently. I wanted that son. His name was Molly. I had no idea how I was going to memorialize him and I really didn't have the bandwidth to consider. But as I talked more to women about their own pregnancy loss, so many others shared their similar stories. As a mother to my now 4-year-old son, who to this day, every day, asks me about his little brother, who he has never met, every day. How do I hold space for the life of Molly, Earthside? This is how. By holding space for a sisterhood of women who have also lost their babies. To know that this experience is actually so common, and there are other women mourning in their homes, with their families, to me is the best way I know how to memorialize Molly or hold hands through healing. So I hope this episode or this message serves you in that way. Today I'm sharing space with Josephina Sanders, a writer and art therapist. Josephina has openly shared her journey through grief after the loss of her pregnancy, an experience that is hard to understand, whether it's your own womb or whether you're supporting as a friend or a partner. In this episode, Josephina and I chat about the loss of pregnancy, mental illness, and the impact both had on her marriage and self-acceptance. This is an under-discussed topic in our community, but one that I believe can liberate us from isolation. On the path through depression and grief, none of us are actually alone. So Josephina, welcome to Life I Swear.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, I'm so excited. I will say that your work and your writing immediately spoke to me when I came across it. And it spoke to me loud. It spoke to me clear. You have shared a very honest journey about mental wellness, pregnancy loss, healing. And I just want to start by thanking you for that. As someone personally who has struggled with both, it really means something to have someone articulate what you're feeling and what you're grieving, and not having the words to share or the courage to share really can be really limiting in my healing process personally, not knowing like how other women are going through it or getting through it or that there are so many other women experiencing similar struggles can feel daunting when you're doing it in isolation. So I really appreciate the work that you've done in telling your story.
Thank you so much. Thank you. I feel like every time I share, it's always a fight internally of, okay, do I want to share this? Does it sound too sad? Or, you know, this is a little vulnerable. How would my mom feel if she knew that I'm sharing these things? But, you know, like every one of those thoughts or those doubts go away every time I hear words like yours, you know, where people are like, you know, I'm just glad that I'm not the only one. And I feel like when I started sharing from that point of view, it was like everything else just doesn't matter anymore, because I wanted to, like, I typically write for myself. So I wanted to be that person that I needed during that time or during the time I feel the way I feel. But there's always that, you know, okay, did I do the right thing? Did I say the right thing? But yeah, just hearing your words and even from other people, how it's just been encouraging. It's so encouraging for me, and it continues to motivate me to keep sharing and keep opening up.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like journaling out loud, really.
Yeah.
When you think of it that way. But you've had to fight and find the light in what I imagine were some really tough and dark times. Can you tell us a little bit about your experiences?
Yeah, so I was raised in a very Dominican home. So when I say very Dominican, I mean like at home, I was born in New York and we lived in Rhode Island, and like there was no United States at home. It was Dominican Republic. We spoke Spanish. A lot of the things that they tend to do is, like, you know, anything outside of happiness or passion is hidden. So if there's any mental illness that you struggle with, that's kept quiet and no one talks about it. You don't talk to, like, you don't talk about your mental illness with your parents. You don't talk about and nothing negative within your family. So, like, I didn't realize that I struggled with depression and anxiety until I got married. And it was like 2 weeks after our wedding. We're home, we're about to make some transitions, and I struggle with, like, just depression. And, you know, a lot of my friends would say, like, what's wrong with you? Like, you just got married, you should be happy. But I didn't realize that there was a lot of baggage that I took with me, and there was a lot of unresolved mental illness that I've never, like, had the opportunity to work through. And I can just remember, like, walking into my mom's room and watching her, like, it would be late at night, me as a little girl walking into her room and just finding her crying. And she would turn off the night, like, her light, and she'll say, hey, go to your room. So it was always, like, very hidden, very private, you know, like, you cannot see this part of me. So it was always very difficult for me to open up and share deep parts of me, because I was wired to think, okay, strength is just keeping it moving, not allowing myself to face those emotions and facing them in private.
What is strength to you? What does strength look like to you now that you've had an opportunity to redefine what it is?
Strength to me looks like being vulnerable with myself. Strength looks like healing and allowing myself to heal and giving myself permission to heal. And strength doesn't always mean I share everything that goes on with my life. You know, I think that there is beauty between being private, and that's a wise thing to be private. But I've also found my strength in sharing some of the things I struggle with, especially in a world where a lot of things seem to be filtered and curated. So I really want to be, I feel like I found my strength when I was when I allowed myself to be vulnerable. So I would say strength to me is vulnerability.
Absolutely. And so through that, like, you know, we all heal differently. We all kind of process, you know, the challenges that show up in our own mental wellness differently. What approach did you take when you were first diagnosed? It was shortly after you got married, right?
So right after we got married, I mean, like, there was no hiding it. So it was kind of hard because I didn't know what to do. So I just started drawing and journaling, and I didn't go to therapy until, like, maybe our second year of marriage. But I didn't go to, like, therapy on my own, because we went to couples therapy maybe our second year, and then I started going to individual therapy by myself after we miscarried, which we can talk about that after. But my approach to healing when I realized that I was struggling with depression was, I just picked up a journal, I started journaling, and I taught myself calligraphy. So I would write encouraging quotes to myself, and I would write how I feel and kind of just use the paper as my place of being able to release everything that was in my head and everything that I was struggling with. I would just write it out. And I found that to be such a therapeutic and creative outlet, because I used to journal a ton, but I never really opened up to myself when I would journal. It would be very, you know, surfacey, not really share much, but I started to actually affirm myself in my journaling and share where I'm at in my journaling, and also speak words of life and truth to myself. in my journaling, and that was super encouraging during that time.
Mm-hmm. I love it. And now you have a journal of your own that you've published, which is beautiful. I love that. I think there's like definitely when you say you weren't really going deep in your journaling, you know, there's the venting kind of journaling. This happened and this happened. It's kind of like a narrative of what's happened. And then I feel like there's a whole nother approach to journaling that's more constructive. And getting in the practice of asking you those constructive questions is important to make journaling actually therapeutic. So yeah, and now that you've kind of decided to explore the artistry, which led to the storytelling, like the more active healing practices. And you clearly live intentionally to put self-care first. What does coming home to yourself now look like for you?
So for me, I picture two, like I can see two different ways of coming home to myself. So I would say like, you know, you had a very full day working and you're just ready to get home. And once you get home, you take off your shoes and you get comfortable and you do something to reward yourself. So whether that is, okay, I'm going to grab some tea and just decompress by sitting down and indulging in this tea, or allowing myself to take a bath and just, you know, soak up whatever happened that day, to be able to do that. That would be coming home to myself, comforting myself and encouraging myself, celebrating myself for a job well done, and not just what that day consisted of, but what I'm doing with myself. And then another way I see it is like a Sunday morning. Like Sunday mornings are so slow. And you take the time to like relish the day, and allowing yourself to just rest, for me, is coming home to myself. And being aware of, okay, whether this day was a good day or bad day, like I'm still going to see the beauty in it. So coming home to myself is remembering me. And not just remembering the things that I have to do, the things that, you know, are on my checklist that haven't gotten done within days, but remembering myself and taking care of myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally agree. And I feel like I've always, you know, believed that to be coming home to myself, though I lost my sense of self when I lost my pregnancy. Which was 7 months pregnant at the time. But was that a challenge for you to continuously, constantly remind yourself to take care of you when you had a pregnancy loss?
Yes, it's been such a journey, because, you know, I wasn't as mindful and intentional with myself until I had a miscarriage. And it took me a while to even take care of myself or learn how to take care of myself. Like from the time I miscarried to even now, as we continue to try for our rainbow baby, it's been a journey. And a lot of times there's that season where you're just like, you know, I just don't understand if my body loves me, because if it loved me, then, you know, it wouldn't break me in this way. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't allow life to like not live in my womb. So there's this lesson of like learning to give grace to yourself. And also I had to get to a place where I recognized the loss, but I also recognize the strength in my body, because even though I felt like it failed me, it's the only thing I'm depending on to keep going.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that once I had that realization, like it doesn't take away from the moments I get discouraged, to take, like, with taking care of myself, but allowing myself to just be aware, and when I feel triggered or when I feel discouraged, allowing myself to give grace to that part of myself that mm-hmm. needs that grace.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I just felt like I was in pieces, and my work was to gather up all of the pieces and kind of reconstruct and reinvent the woman that I wanted to be, with new dreams. I think when we talk about grief, we are not just grieving what has lost us, but the dreams that were attached to those things that we've lost, and the plans that were attached to those things we lost. So, you know, just reinventing, you know, what healthy and happy could look like in lieu of what we lost can be a challenge. But so you had a lot of these experiences to share with your then new husband. What was it like to have to face those things while in a new union? And did that what effect or impact did that have on your marriage?
I feel like, you know, people don't really talk much about, like, the hard things in marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times people spend so much time on Pinterest pinning the perfect wedding, but they don't mm-hmm. take time to actually talk about the things that, you know, that are going to be hard, and recognize the fact that it's not just Pinterest. Like, there's going to be times where you can't find a pin for that. You have to figure out what you need to do, and you need to work through it together.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, it was coming to, like, face to face with my mental illness and allowing him to kind of see that as well. Especially because at first, you know, it was something I hid and I didn't want anybody to know about, but here's someone who lives with me. And in a sense, like, they're a mirror, because you're seeing even more pieces of you that you never saw were wrong or that you never even dealt with. So with depression, it was something that he doesn't really know much about.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you know, there was frustration in that, because, you know, he's an extrovert, I'm an introvert, and he's like, the cup is halfway full, and I'm like, well, the cup is almost empty, so we have to figure out how we're gonna fill it up kind of person. So we had to get to a place where, one, not that he's not, like, understanding, but there was a sense of him where he just didn't know how to deal with that. But as his wife, you know, there was part of me who was like, you know, I still need your support.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to learn that his support was saying, you know, babe, like, I understand, but I don't know. Like, I don't know mm-hmm. what you want me to do. And for him, it was to learn that, like, a lot of times when living life with someone who has mental illness, like, there's a lot of things that you cannot fix. And as a man, for him, like, he wants to fix things. He wants to make mm-hmm. me feel better. And it was the same thing with our miscarriage. Like, he didn't know how to do it, so he went straight to work the next day
mm-hmm.
after we found out about the miscarriage. And for me, like, I was like, bro, like, wait a minute. Like, you know, there was a lot of emotional baggage that I had to work through. So it's hard. It's like
mm-hmm.
really hard. And 5 years later, you know, we're still learning, and we're still learning as we're on this journey of infertility, and we're still learning as we, you know, this is our, like, third year after miscarriage, and there's still things that we have to work through, because
mm-hmm.
it's a lot. And for me, like, especially with battling depression and anxiety, it's even harder, you know, because there's still that part of me which doesn't want to open up all the way or say, you know, today is, like, really hard for me or things like
mm-hmm.
that. But allowing myself to open up and share those things with him also encourages me when I share on social media or any kind of, you know, platform.
Mm-hmm. Was it...
So being able to open up with him has been healing for me.
Yeah, I can imagine. I can also imagine that confiding in him was also a saving grace to some mm-hmm. degree. But was it, I think a lot of women don't always know what we need when we need it most. And I am guilty of this, not asking for help and not being vocal about what our needs are. But was it hard to let him know what you needed during that time, or knowing what you needed to ask?
Oh yeah. And it still is, because, you know, sometimes, again, like just like you said, like sometimes we don't know, like we don't know what it is that we need. And I'm going to give you a real example that just happened, but mm-hmm. I went to a herbalist, and she pretty much, like, it was a rough appointment because I haven't gotten my period and I suffer from PCOS. But the herbalist, the way that they do Chinese medicine is that they check your pulse and they check your tongue. And from that, from the vibration of your pulse and from, like, the coloring of your tongue, they can tell a lot of things. So for me, she's like, your pulse, it has like a weird, like, skip to it, and like the coloring of your tongue shows that, like, you are, like, you live in stress by nature. Like, that is something that you struggle with, which anxiety and depression, hence, like, she's able to see those things from that.
Mm-hmm.
So she was just telling me, like, you know, if you don't take care of yourself, you know, you're going to run your whole body down. Like, you're not going to get pregnant. You're not going to be able to do anything because you are making yourself sick. So I was super discouraged. And I was like, I just want to tell Jay, like, today was just a rough day. And I got home and I was, like, trying to tell him. And he, like, it's been, like, a span of bad news over and over and over this past week. And just, like, a lot of, like, just, like, hard things. Like, this year has started off kind of hard on everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So as I try to open up, he's like, what? Like, another bad thing? And it like, shut me off. Like, I was just like, okay, I don't want to say anything. I don't feel safe.
Mm-hmm.
And we had to work through that. Like, we had to work through the fact that, like, at that point, all I needed was to share how I felt. But because you were already so overwhelmed with everything that was going on, you're like, you reacted instead of responding. So, like, that has been, like, the biggest lesson for us. Like, even if I'm going to share something with him, if there's something that I need, I'm allowing myself to take time for myself and figure out what it is that I need.
Mm-hmm.
And also take the time to figure, okay, like, is this the right time to talk about it? You know, because I wasn't, even though, you know, I was super stimulated after that appointment and I felt really bad, you know, like, I didn't know what he was thinking and I wasn't checking in to see how he was doing mentally and emotionally. So I don't want to say it's a balance. It's just, it's a way of boundaries. So figuring out, okay, like, am I overstepping right now because he feels some kind of way? And also, is he overstepping with me, or is he allowing himself to be mindful to listen to me? And that's hard too, because we have to figure out how to communicate with each other when it comes to things like that. And it's always very touchy when it's emotional or something that's just really hard to swallow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. It's relationships are hard, and I think it when you are going through the same you're going through a journey together under the same roof. There's sometimes an assumption that you're processing them similarly as well,
mm-hmm.
but you could go through the same thing and interpret, normalize. Reframe completely different, you know?
Yeah.
So how important was it outside of your marriage, how important was it, or is or is community in your healing process? And what was the process like for you to share your journey of pain and challenges with a larger community?
You know, I have been learning, and I think I've learned this for a while, on like such beauty and community, and I have gained some of like the very best friends through healing and through sharing about my miscarriage. And there's things that like Jay, my husband, understands. Like he sees the depth of the pain of loss, but there's something so different with a community of women who really understand that pain, who have walked through that pain physically and emotionally and mentally. And there's such a beauty in, again, knowing like you're not the only one who has walked through that or who has experienced that or who feels this kind of way. And it's been so amazing for me to be able to have a community that way, where I know like, okay, I'm not going crazy. I'm not the only one. And being able to be in community in the midst of healing has encouraged me in a way where I know where I'm triggered and I know where when I'm like feeling like depression is going to hit, I'm going to have like depression or an anxiety episode. Like I kind of know when it happens mm-hmm. and I have somebody to reach out and be vulnerable with outside of social media. Like mm-hmm. I have that community, and that a lot of that community was formed through my healing and through my opening up and sharing. Mm-hmm. So community is a huge piece to healing. And as an introvert, you know, I find energy and I find like restoration by myself, but also being alone too much can harm me, especially when, you know, dealing with mental illness, because I get in my head and mm-hmm. I think a lot of things, and sometimes I dig myself into a deeper hole and I need someone to help me. And being able to get into a community and being able to share into a community where we can help each other get out of those holes has just been beyond healing for me. It's a huge blessing, and I don't take it for granted. My circle's super small, but I'm so grateful that even in the midst of having a small circle, there's so much depth. And that depth has encouraged me to open up and share even more within my community.
Mm-hmm. I love that. I love it. And so if community is one tool, I want to know more about art therapy, what you're studying. What exactly is it? And how do you think, how have you used it? I know you started, you said you started using it very early on in this process, but how do you think two non-artists can weave art therapy into their self-care practice?
So one of the things that, like, when I was walking through depression and I picked up calligraphy, there was something so beautiful about, like, spending so much time on trying to learn how to form a letter. And, like, getting, it's like exploring your curiosity.
Mm-hmm.
And it allowed me to disconnect from my emotions and really focus on, like, the art I was making.
It's meditative, too.
Yeah, it was so meditative. And during that time, like, as I was starting off calligraphy, I'm like, oh, okay, like, I could do a shop and create things. And I started doing that, but it was like, if you're doing calligraphy, a lot of times they put you with the wedding industry and mm-hmm. you're making invitations and all of that. And it was hard for me to be able to kind of connect with that. For me, like, I would get super stressed out with wedding stuff, and I only take like a limited amount because it's super overwhelming. And I also want to protect my craft and protect, you know, the fact that it is my creative outlet and not just make it into a business. But I never knew how I can combine both. I loved writing. And then as I continued opening up about mental wellness, I loved wellness. And I loved art. But I'm like, okay, like, how can I use this in my career? So when I started going back to school last year, and I was just going to major in graphic design because I love graphic design. But as I continued research, I saw that there's something called an art therapist. And art therapists, they can either use art therapy for people with learning disabilities, or there's the mindful wellness aspect of it. And I want to do both. I think it's a beautiful thing to use art and see the beauty of art and see how art can really help someone understand different subjects in school. So last year I went to DC and I went to an art school, and it's for students with learning disabilities, and they use different forms of art. I mean, like drama and woodshop, and I was able to teach a calligraphy class to the teachers there. And as I toured around the school, that's where I learned more about art therapy. They have art therapists that would do one-on-ones with the students. But ultimately, it was an art school, and they would learn everything from, like, English to math to science through art. So I was just like, wow, that's, like, a beautiful thing to be able to incorporate art. And I think that a lot of times people are like, well, I can't draw, so I can't do art. But art is so much more than just drawing. Art can be taking photos. Art can be dancing. Mm-hmm. Like, there's performing arts. There's visual arts. There's so much different art, and you can incorporate that to anything. So I really wanted to incorporate it to mental wellness, and that's where I'm at now. So I'm taking all the things I need to take for art therapy, but I'm taking different art classes and seeing pretty much just, like, allowing myself to explore. Mm-hmm. So right now, like, I'm taking a ceramics class, and I've never taken a ceramics class. But being able to use all these different things to be able to find a creative outlet to help with mental wellness, to help with grief. So with me, like, I think I started really, really journaling mindfully during maybe, like, the past 3 years. But before that, again, like, it was like how we were sharing. It was just, you know, mindless journaling, just write whatever. But now it's more intentional. And I also took, like, an art class earlier this summer, and the teacher would have us, like, go outside, draw something you see, and journal about it. And that's another mindful way of appreciating, like, the art around you and appreciating the journey about you, which, like, around you, which is also another way to be mindful and intentional. So that's what I want to do with art therapy. I want to be able to use art therapy in the mental wellness and just the wellness in general community. And I also want to be able to teach that, not just as a, you know, not just as a hobby, but also as a way to make sure that we're taking care of ourselves and keeping ourselves accountable on, you know, expanding in our curiosity and allowing ourselves to be creative. Because I believe that we all have creativity inside of us. But some of us don't know what it looks like or have never explored it.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's like, I think it is like continuous exploration of self. And it really reflects who we are and how we're processing, which our art evolves.
Yeah.
But I think until we're given those creative means to explore, we often suppress the feelings that, and we're just terribly hard on ourselves.
Yeah.
How do you think Black women can give ourselves more grace?
I think that there's a lot of unlearning we need to do. And one of them starts off with, like, what strength really looks like. Because I think that a lot of times we confuse suppressing to strength or hiding for just, you know, we confuse it for strength. And I recently took my friend Alex her virtual workshop. Mm-hmm. And she, like, one of the assignments were to write an apology letter to yourself. Mm. And it was so powerful because it allowed me to see some of the things that I have carried with me since childhood. And I allowed myself to believe those things. And I would say a good way to learn to give ourselves grace is by writing apology letters to ourselves, because it allows us to draw closer to ourselves. It allows us to unlearn those things that we learned early on or we've, you know, just lived by. And it allows us to truly give ourselves grace. So, mm-hmm. like, writing an apology letter to show yourself grace, allowing ourselves to rest, mm-hmm. and to not feel guilty about resting. Like, that is so huge. There's always this guilt or this shame on taking a day off, but, like, we need that rest. And rest is not a reward. It's something that you need to live by. It's something that you need. Just as much as you need food, you need rest. You need to replenish, and you need to make sure that you're taking care of yourself. And every time that I remember to take care of myself, I remember grace. And allowing myself to give myself grace is taking care of me.
Yeah, beautiful. I recently had some women over, and it was in January. We asked, what's one question that's arising within you in this new year? And I said, unbecoming and becoming. And I feel like you just perfectly articulated what that is. So thank you. Thank you, Josefina.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to Life I Swear. You can follow Life I Swear on Instagram. And if you haven't yet, subscribe, rate, and review this podcast wherever you get your podcast fix. And learn more at lifeiswear.com. I hope you join me next week for another episode. In the meantime, be well, friend.